Welcome to the Omfit podcast.
This is David Marsh of Omfit, and this is a 15-minute podcast with Joe Joffa, who's one of the most celebrated figures in the world of German journalism and academe. He also bridges the gap between the United States and Germany. He is the publisher, one of the group of publishers of Die Zeit, the heavyweight German weekly, and he was also previously at the Süddeutsche Zeitung, where he was the foreign editor, where I got to know him about 30 years ago. And he regularly crisscrosses the Atlantic. And he's a professor and a lecturer in numerous United States universities. And it's a very great pleasure to talk to you, Joe. I'm going to talk about your book, which came out last year, just really at the time when the COVID crisis was starting to hit us, Der gute Deutsche, why the Germans have got a different moral attitude towards politics and economics because of history. Could you just explain about your book and why people should read it, Joe?
Well, first of all, they should read it because I wrote it, and it will add to circulation. But to be serious, I've been thinking all my life about this enormous transformation. The most hated and feared country in Europe has went through after the war and embarked upon a career of what I call career of a moral superpower, which is quite a difference if you think back into the history of modern Germany, say, when the Reich was first unified under Bismarck, and then you segue into two world wars. In the beginning, see, the Bismarckian, that Germany played political hardball with the best or the worst of them. Bismarck, the founder, who was aware of the Reich's vulnerable position in the heart of Europe, then cast a vast net of alliances across Europe that would protect Germany against two-front war from France in the west and Russia in the east. And that, however, was still a very peace-minded grand strategy, whereas their Kaiser and their Führer dispensed with such diplomatic niceties like alliance building and trying to dispatch or evade an endemic insecurity by going for European hegemony. We all know not only did it not work, it failed more miserably each time. And the price was, of course, two world wars and dismemberment and partition. Now you have an amazing cultural transformation rarely seen in the annals of international state politics. So after 1945, the metamorphosis from power politics or realpolitik to moralpolitik. And the logic of that transformation was obvious. If in 1945, you are an outcast, if you are the most hated nation on earth, occupied by the four victor powers, the US, Soviet Union, Britain, and France, if you don't have an army, let alone full sovereignty, you shift from power to goodness. But there's a nice twist to this. It's, of course, a lot easier to be moral if your security is assured, which was never the case in the long history of Germany. And the nice thing is that if you try to get back into the community of nations and regain acceptance and legitimacy, you don't threaten anybody, you don't push revisionist claims, and so that made re-entry unbelievably easy compared to what it was like in 45 when they were out to dismember Germany for good. But the nice thing
question now, Joe, is that this has been a very successful period since the Second World War. As you rightly say, you stick up very much for what you call Republican patriotism as the new creed of Germany. Will it carry on now? That's the question.
Let me make the basic point here, that goodness had a solid realpolitik foundation, namely security made in USA. And so as a result, Germany could not be threatened, nor could it threaten anybody, being tightly integrated into the American-led NATO alliance. And goodness was also profitable. While the US, the UK, and France spilled blood and treasure around the world, you know, from Korea to Algeria, Malaya, various colonial wars, post-colonial war, Germany could stay at home and tend to its own garden. So gratis security made Moralpolitik profitable. And to conclude this train of thought, lo and behold, in an international BBC poll in 2014, Germany was voted most liked country in the world. So why fight if you can be nice and community-minded, substituting trade, investment, and institutionalism for raw power?
But in the world of the 2020s, we've got a new aggressive China. We've got a new person now in the White House. We just had yesterday the most extraordinary scenes. And it's amazing, isn't it, that people are now accusing the Americans, or at least some part of the protesters, of being like Nazis. And we are now in a harsher, more aggressive world where some people say America is going to force to the Germans and Europe to pay for their defense. So will this moral superiority and this balance of goodness, which, as you say, has served Germany extremely well in the 80 years since the Second World War, will this continue to be such a fantastic recipe for the Germans in the future?
Well, let me stress the point I made earlier. I'm talking not just about convenience or tactical maneuvers. I'm talking about a cultural transformation, which is that under this American umbrella and embedded in all these communities, the Germans have kind of imbibed their new career or this new culture. And so you're perfectly correct in saying, look, the world has suddenly become a hell of a lot more dangerous. And Germany, being number one in Europe and the fourth largest economy in the world, will have to put its shoulder to the wheels. But given the depth of the transformation, I don't think that the Germans pre-post-Merkel will transform itself again and suddenly begin to behave like a real strategic power, which it has eschewed for a number of good reasons. Why ditch a good thing, which was so profitable and it costs so little? I often think about, you know, about Germany as the Winnie the Pooh of grand strategy. Winnie was asked at a party, hey, would you want honey or condensed milk on your bread? And he hesitates a bit and then says, you know, I'll have both, but I won't need the bread. So if I were one of the three really big powers that Manzi mentioned, I wouldn't count on Berlin or fear Berlin taking sides between the US and China, nor between the US and Russia. Though in the case of Russia, there's a new nuance. You know, Germany has always tried to avoid confrontation with the Kremlin, but recently, given Putin's expansionism, it has taken a bit of a harder line without slamming the door. So those who think that Germany will take sides either against Russia or against China, I think will be disappointed.
A last point in this section, which leads us to the post-Merkel era. You mentioned Winnie the Pooh. Isn't it more Yogi Berra, when you come to a fork in the road, I will take it? Isn't it more that? And also, what does this mean for the post-Merkel strategy for Europe? Because you have written over the years, mostly in English rather than in German, some very hard articles about the European Monetary Union, saying that Germany is basically taking part in this, part of this moral politics that you've been talking about, but also because it wants to have peace and quiet on the European front, and therefore it's going to pay a great deal and put up with a certain amount of stress in order to make sure that Europe continues to go forward. Do you think that's still going to be the case under whoever takes over after Angela Merkel?
I think probably more so than ever. You are an economist. I'm a bit of an economist, and I thought that the euro was politically and economically a misbegotten adventure because it would lead to inevitably lead to a transfer union, to the Europeanization of Europe's, you know, of national debts like Italy's or France, what have you. And what the economists, you know, said 20, 15 years ago has turned out to be a correct prediction. And if you look at Merkel, and we can then talk about her successors, she has step by step moved towards transfer union and debt union. You know, the Greeks hated her because and painted her in their caricatures as with the Nazi, with the Hitler mustache. But in the end, the Germans always paid, and they keep paying. And why are they doing so? Because, again, come back to realpolitik, not just to be a good guy, which is part of it, but it's the European enterprise and the monetary union obviously serves the strongest, biggest, economically most weighty country better than anybody else. So consider what we call debt or transfer union, consider it as a membership fee of the one central country, centrally positioned country, that profits most from the common enterprise.
Let's wrap up this section now, Joe, because I want to get everybody to go out and buy your book. It's called Der gute Deutsche, die Karriere einer moralischen Supermacht, and it's by C. Bertelsmann. Go out and buy it straight away, all those of you who are listening. I would recommend that when it comes out in English, Joe, maybe you can give this as your last very short comment. Maybe it should be called Why Being Good is Good for You.
That's a nice line. I'm going to use it.
Thank you very much indeed for this podcast. Everybody, go out and buy the book. Thank you very much, Joe Joffe. Over and out from David and over and out from Joe on this podcast. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the OMFIF podcast.